It's time to kick it off, yeah. It's time to do a great MMA show. It's here with topics you like out of the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on into that MMA spot.
Thank you for joining me today on the MMA show. We have a very serious topic that we're talking about today. This week we're talking about suicide, and I have a wonderful lady who's joining us today, and you might remember her. Her name is Cynthia Hyatt. She's a psychotherapist here in the Valley, and I just wanted to ask her to come and give her expertise. Now, that was interesting that you said that about even though they can get off the drugs, that the damage to the brain has already been done. It's not something I ever thought about. Mm-hmm. That I think that the solution would have been if he just got off drugs altogether in a safe way where it's not just cold turkey. Because once you're on those hardcore drugs, you can't just go cold turkey and expect yourself to be okay.
No, you could die.
You could definitely die. That withdrawal is scary, mm-hmm. and it could do crazy things to your body.
Because you see, our brain, the way our brain has a lot to do with our spirit, and our mind is a part of our soul and our spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're sitting here in front of your computer and you're restored in your soul and in your spirit, but your computer won't work because there's damage to the hard drive that can't be undone, that's a difficult way to live. Now, it's very possible because there are some things like staying on methadone or Suboxone for the rest of your life. That replaces what was stolen by the opiates, and it replaces it in a healthier manner, but it still is, you are now drug addicted the rest of your life. That's different than drug history, sometimes with alcohol or tobacco or marijuana. The brain damage, alcohol can do terrible brain damage to people if it has been long-term alcoholism or a lot of it.
This is something new I didn't know either, and I just found out this year that a long-term abuse of alcohol could cause brain damage.
Oh, very, very much so.
I didn't know that.
Like Alzheimer's, like dementia. Okay, there's not the ability to recall. There isn't the ability to do abstract problem solving. The ability to retain information and have any short-term memory. Very difficult.
Wow. So if you're a family member trying to reach out to these people, what are the best ways, I guess, they could do it, even though they have to want the help? I mean, how can we talk to the...
I think that this is one of those things where, because it is a spiritual issue, suicide is always a spiritual issue. That's what it comes down to. It goes past a psychological, emotional issue. It is now spiritual in that I have no future, no hope. Okay, there is no reason to live. My life is not worth living. That is a spiritual crisis. All right? And so it starts emotionally, psychologically, but it ends up at the end being a spiritual crisis. And so what I recommend to families that are dealing with this is that instead of always trying to go horizontal with the person, that you really get a massive prayer group going that is doing some of those spiritual disciplines like praying and fasting for this person and really calling on the dark side, you know, availing themselves of God against the dark side,
right,
and calling out the dark side, you know.
Fighting the spiritual battle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For real. Because it is a spiritual battle. Once they have crossed over and Satan really has, they befriended that darkness. Now, I'm not saying they befriended Satan.
Right, no, of course not.
But now the darkness is more comfortable than the light.
Of course, yeah.
And so the darkness feels now safe. And Satan's going to make it feel really good. It's going to no longer feel bad. And so it's really hard to call somebody out of that and get them back where they actually do want to live. Because when someone is contemplating suicide, what they've reduced their life down to is, well, if I could just have a girlfriend, or if I just could get a good job, or if I just could have success over here, or if I thought that, you know, so-and-so would love me again. So it gets reduced down to, I just want this problem fixed, and if that would be fixed, then I would be okay. When we know that that's not going to do anything. And generally, the problems that people are presenting are the past. They've already happened.
That's very true.
There's nothing that we can do about them now.
That's very true.
And so we have to get them to the place that they're seeing. But this is not a temporal horizontal problem that if that just would work, then there's a reason to live. It has to be an intervention with God, the Holy Spirit, that restores that life force in them, that causes them to see. Life has trials and tribulations. But I have a friend that is going to help me with those. And there's a point to my life, and there is a reason that I was born. And it's much bigger than just this one circumstance of I didn't get into the Air Force, or I lost my girlfriend, or, you know, I lost a baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these types of things. That it's that those things are outside of us and affect us, but they have nothing to do with why we were born.
Right.
And so it's reorienting that. And so they have to connect with somebody, whether that be a good therapist, a pastor, a mentor. But it can't necessarily be a friend or a family member, because you, there's no way that you could shoulder that. You have to do your life and what God has called you to do.
That's true.
And so
yes.
If you put yourself in that position, you're going to end up letting that person down, which they are looking for reasons to die. So if you don't meet every single need perfectly at the right time in the right way or anticipate it, you're already setting yourself up, okay, to be one of the reasons that they can say, see, nobody can help me.
Wow, I didn't even think about
so
that.
So it's really important that when it's at that level, that there has to be professional help of somebody that is either is doing this as their avocation, so mm-hmm. they have the time, or somebody's doing it as a profession, so that they are consistent with the person and there and available at odd times or odd hours and isn't trying to get any emotional needs met from that person. So that, that the person that's contemplating suicide or living in that, that kind of way
mm-hmm.
isn't having to then worry about whether or not my needs are being met. And I'm not trying to get them to be okay so that I'm going to be okay because I can't take it anymore. I can't go home tonight and think you're going to kill yourself tonight.
That's true.
And so there has to be outside help and intervention.
And it's hard because if they refuse it, then it's like you're left with...
Well, see, and that's where you're always praying first. And then you still have to practice healthy boundaries. But you're just a mortal person. And their life is not your responsibility.
And then when they do take their life, you can't blame yourself because of the boundaries you set.
Right, because the boundaries have to be. Everybody has a choice. And if we look throughout history, there have been lots of people that have had really bad circumstances that
right.
had every reason to kill themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they were abandoned, neglected, abused, forgotten, forsaken, whatever it was. And they didn't. And so it ultimately comes down to the fact that if they're depending on the external world to be a perfect place and people to be perfect people, then they'll always be let down. So the boundary is... Maybe I could have done it a little bit better that last Thursday, okay? But that's not going to keep that person from suiciding the next Thursday, okay? If they don't come out of that and agree to come out of it and work on it and take that kind of responsibility that says, I cannot let myself entertain that choice anymore. I choose life today. And they do it every day. If that's not the case, then you're going to feel like their life is in your hands. And it's up to you. And if you don't do it right, they're going to kill themselves. So you have to remember that we can do everything right. We can have people in psychiatric hospitals mm-hmm. that are on 15-minute checks. And if they want to kill themselves, they find a way and do it. And so when people are going to do it, it is not anything that we, on a mortal level, you know, can stop. We can help to pray and stay connected to them so that God can do that work to get them to want to make a choice
mm-hmm.
in their life. But ultimately, if you stop them from suiciding, all you've done is buy some time.
Gotcha.
Which is good, because maybe something can happen.
Right.
But you don't ever take responsibility for somebody's choice to kill themselves. That is always a personal choice. This is why we are helpless in it, because it is so personal.
Right.
They don't let us in that area.
And that's where I think free will kind of bites sometimes. And the way I picture God, and it's based on, you know, I just finally came to realize, realizing this year, that I think sometimes God sits on his hands, and maybe this is not true, but this is how I see it, because he created this free will thing. And he doesn't like every decision that we make, and he knows that a lot of these decisions we make will end up hurting ourselves. But he doesn't ever want anyone to come to him, because he forced us in creating us to come to him like a robot, because that is not rewarding for anyone, to be forced into loving someone or forced into doing anything. There's no reward in that. So God created this dynamic of okay, I'm going to give these people the choices to make good choices or bad choices, and I'm hoping they'll make good choices, and I hope one of those choices is they want a relationship with me. Because he could have created us all to have a relationship with him, and then we wouldn't have any of these problems today. But sometimes I think he sits on his hands, and I imagine like a parent who has a kid that wandered off the wrong way. Maybe they went into drug or alcohol abuse, or maybe they're in a gang or whatever, and they're trying so hard to get their kid back to the right path, but that kid's ultimate is making the choices whether they're going to be on the right path. And so as a parent, you're kind of like stuck. You have to sit on your hands because there's not a lot of things you can do except try and talk to them, try and love them, try and pray for them. But ultimately, it's their decision. So I don't know, out of all this that's happened in my life, I think sometimes that happens to God where he knows someone's hurting so bad and he wants to intervene, but he can't unless someone prays for that person and allows him to start working in their life because of this whole free will thing.
Some of that is true, but you also have to remember that even if nobody's praying for that person, Jesus is.
That's true.
So somebody's always praying for everybody.
It's true.
And so it's one of these things where that differentiation between free will and self-will, all right, sovereignty, you know, divine intervention, all these types of things, those are really pretty much incomprehensible to us. And so when it comes to something like suicide, we make it as simple as we can to understand this very complex issue. And so we know there's free will. We do. But we don't know where they lost some of their free will along the way. And so it isn't necessarily at that moment where they're killing themselves, that's when they made the choice. Mm-hmm. The choice happened back a lot farther. And it takes, some people can make that choice and not do it for a year.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. They just walk around to plan.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Because what happens is, if they know they have the choice to kill themselves, that helps them stay.
Huh.
And so it's this bizarre, twisted, kind of tangled process. So when they decide to, when they finally actually do it, it has been in the works. It isn't like somebody just wakes up and wonder, we can't take it and I'm going to kill myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a truly impulsive issue, all right? It's an impulse when they finally do it, but it's not just like out of the blue, okay? And so all along the way, they've been losing some free will.
See, that, I'm glad he said something like that, because I didn't even think that was, that even happened, and that kind of like puts a light bulb in my mind now. I'm like, wow, you could lose your ability to have free will. Perhaps that's true dealing with drugs and stuff, and
any kind of altered state, mm-hmm. which is disconnecting from self, causes me to lose some of my free will and causes me to be open, certainly, to darkness. Open to darkness. And so I'm going to get a lot more attack. I'm going to get a lot more relentless pressure because I've opened myself up.
Mm. Makes sense.
So there's a whole different process about suicide. And that's why even if we think of the analogy that you're saying with the parents. See, this is how God says, regardless of the choice, there's still this child. So the free will that a saved person has is not whether or not they're still a kid. It's how they're going to experience God, how much they're going to experience God,
mm-hmm.
how long they're going to experience God, what they're going to experience when they meet him, you know, when they die. And so, but we don't have the free will to stop being his child.
Unfortunately, we ran out of time this week on the program, so please tune in next week as we continue this discussion.
And so thinking about number one, just yourself, think about number two, somebody else, because eventually number two will look out for you.